You're listening to Unity FM on 93.5. I'm 8 years old, and even I know it's the best station in Brum. Bye!
So there you go, the best station in Brum, Unity FM 93.5, Heart of the City, the final half hour of Behind the Headlines, for this week anyway, with myself, Tariq Ziad, Saeed Ahmed, and our sports correspondent, Humayun. Also joining us is our regular correspondent, Tony Gosling. We've been discussing the implications, or the wider implications, of the recent fiasco, if you like, over alleged bombs contained in packages that were discovered at airports, including the East Midlands, Leicestershire. Rejoining us is Tony. Hello?
Hi there.
And as we left, just for the break, we certainly got into quite an interesting discussion about the whole the thing with the Tea Party.
I think a lot of this stuff we've been seeing recently from the security services saying, oh, you know, there's lots and lots of threats of terrorism from here, there and everywhere. Now, that, I think, was mostly geared up to the comprehensive spending review back a couple of weeks ago by George Osborne, making sure that the security budgets were all ring-fenced. It may be okay to close our schools and to run down hospitals, but, you know, this is a sacred thing to them. And, of course, they are virtually without scrutiny. We have something called the Joint Intelligence Committee, and that is about the only kind of scrutiny that there is. There's a parliamentary committee as well, but there's very, very little real oversight. And of course, what happens is the political parties select people who, you know, there's this awful expression, a safe pair of hands. I don't know, you know, I'm sure you've heard that.
Yes.
I can't bear it, because it means that here is somebody who will not think for themselves. They will just do what they're told, and they won't ask questions. Now, what do you need on a committee like that? You need someone who will think for themselves and ask questions. So it's no good to have so many people on these government scrutiny committees who are safe pairs of hands. It's the wrong kind of pair of hands to have on that committee from the people point of view. So I think a lot of that was due, a lot of the previous stuff about, oh, we've got to watch out for Irish terrorism, this terrorism, that terrorism, was to do with the comprehensive spending review. But I'm quite concerned now about this focus on Yemen, because this was a bit of a strategic gap. If the West wants to attack Iran, they're a bit of a strategic gap there. So it seems to me that they're putting their kind of last bunkers, last machine guns in place, ready to go for Iran. I find it absolutely abhorrent that they are still pursuing this goal. And I would urge your listeners this is quite a good time now, I think, to contact your Member of Parliament and demand a response from them about what they think about an attack on Iran. Because we need the guarantees from our parliamentarians that they will not sanction such an attack, because such an attack could very well lead to a third world war. It could lead to the deaths of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, and it's simply against the UN Charter of Human Rights, which was formulated after the Second World War to make sure that this kind of thing didn't happen again. So I think we're living in some very dangerous times looking at these US elections, and when the Republicans ride to victory in Congress and the House of Representatives in the next few days, I'm going to be actually sitting here biting my nails thinking, crikey, now Obama really is sidelined, and the hawks can almost do what they want, and there may well be an attack on Iran after that.
Quickly, Tony, do you really think under Obama's leadership there will be an attack in Iran?
I think, for somebody in his position to really stop something. If the military have decided that it's militarily necessary, if the politicians in the country have decided that it's good, how they can think that is beyond me, but there's a lot of people in the States calling for this kind of thing, which is basically a support of Israel, and they're coming, a lot of them, from this rather strange Christian point of view that the Israeli state is God's representative on earth, and therefore everything it does must be correct. It's a little bit like the, you know, there are thankfully very few Catholics, but there are some that actually really do believe that everything the Pope says is the word of God. You know, this is almost like the same kind of thing, but applied to Benjamin Netanyahu. You know, unfortunately, that's the way things are in the States. There's quite a lot of people who would call themselves Christians who believe that. Of course, there are many, many others that don't. But this election will put the Hawks in the driving seat if Sarah Palin and her Tea Party people do as well as many people are expecting. And of course, in the States, they have a lot of electronic voting too, so that can be fixed because the company Diebold that produces those electronic voting machines has already declared that it's pro-Republican, you know. So it may be that the president is sidelined in all this and simply has to go along with it. And the other thing, of course, is that Obama, I think it's probably true to say that every single American president since John F. Kennedy has not really been in charge of America, because Kennedy was shot by the Central Intelligence Agency, not by Lee Harvey Oswald, by from the grassy knoll, by people within his own country who hated him. And it was quite interesting. Recently, I did a little program about that here in Bristol for our John Peel Day, because the DJ, Radio 1 DJ John Peel, was in Dallas for the Kennedy assassination. And it's quite clear that that this guy Lee Harvey Oswald, who was set up for it, didn't do it. And even John Peel himself was expressing a great deal of scepticism, because he actually saw Lee Harvey Oswald, and he was saying, well, he looked like he was someone who was saying, look, you know, this, you're taking this too far. That the whole thing was a setup. That Harvey Oswald was framed for it. So I think from that day on, U.S. presidents have realized that they've got a very, very serious problem with the U.S. military. And of course, you can also look at the connections between the U.S. and the Nazis. You know, the much of the money that was got over to the Nazi looted gold that was got over to South America at the end of the Second World War by the Nazis was then laundered through banks up in New York. And the other thing is, of course, the famous connection was that Prescott Bush, who was George W. Bush, the last president's grandfather, was prosecuted twice in the Second World War under the Trading with the Enemy Act. Their family fortune, a lot of it actually came from illegal trading during World War II through Switzerland with the Nazis. They were supplying the Nazis with oil, and so George W. Bush, his grandfather, was prosecuted twice. So, you know, we have to be rather worried about, I think, about the motives of the U.S. Military-industrial complex, because they are actually, it seems, a very, very powerful force in the country, and almost certainly much more powerful than poor old Obama.
For the listeners out there, could you tell us a bit more about the Tea Party movement? Because all I know from my point of view is Sarah Palin's involved, and obviously I only know from the last previous election versus John McCain. So, and if they are that much of a force, how dangerous are they for the world?
Well, I think it's really a sort of repackaging of the right of the Republican Party. These people, I think, have got a very different point of view to most Americans, and they believe that it's the America's job to kind of be the police of the world, and that it's their job to be the moral arbiters of what's right and what's wrong. And this is the problem, I think, with the Tea Party. Of course, the other thing, interesting aspect of the Tea Party movement is, of course, it's based on this thing called the Boston Tea Party, which was where the U.S. War of Independence against the British started. It was all to do with people chucking tea overboard off ships because they didn't want to pay the taxes that the British were imposing on the tea. And this sparked off the American War of Independence. So you can see that there may well be, in fact, there quite certainly is, an aspect of anti-Britishness in this as well, which for me, in a way, is actually quite a positive thing, in that I think we do need to have a bit of an ideological split between America and Britain, that we need to sort of keep the American, it's almost like a sort of naughty child, since, you know, it was a country which had pretty much given birth by British people who had colonized it. The naughty elder child, we need to keep them at arm's length, because they're getting dangerous and they're getting crazy. And I think if they start thinking that they're the moral arbiters of the peace in the Middle East, then they have got another thing coming, because what they've been doing over the years, of course, is financing and fueling the right-wing racist Israeli state, which is basically has apartheid and segregation as part of its modus operandi, right from the very top, from Benjamin Netanyahu himself. And this support for a racist state has, of course, caused massive resentment throughout the Middle East. And the irony of it all being, of course, that most of the people that are running Israel are not actually of Middle Eastern origin. They're mostly European Jews and mostly secular Jews. They don't actually believe the Bible. So the fact that they're Jewish is just a racial thing. It's not actually a biblical. Many people over this country think, oh, well, that because these people are Jewish, they must be into the Old Testament. Well, most of them, of course, are not. They're secular Jews. So the U.S. Has been supporting this secular Jewish state of Israel for far too long. And I think what's happening with the Tea Party movement is that they are kind of consolidating themselves and trying to turn themselves into a very powerful political force, moving the entire Republican Party, which of course is a kind of opposition party, what with Obama being a Democrat president, over to the right, pushing them over to the right. But do you see what I mean when I'm talking about the Tea Party? Because this separation, or this resentment towards Britain, is getting bigger and bigger in America now, particularly after the BP, you know, British Petroleum, made a bit of a mess down in the Gulf. A lot of Americans don't like the Brits, so this is brewing up as a possible problem for the future. I mean, let's not forget, we still have many thousands of American troops based here in Britain, in various parts of the country, American bases, American listening bases, listening to us, probably on this telephone conversation and on this radio conversation. They have listening stations at Menwith Hill around the country, and we've got a lot of American military bases here. So, you know, it seems to me that if there is this resentment building up in the US against Britain, and Britain is trying to sort of rein the Americans back, then they may simply just react against that and go along with their Israeli friends for this attack on Iran. It's a frightening prospect. You know, it's horrible to have to say it. But I do wonder, when I'm watching the news, BBC news every night, and it's sort of almost like business as usual, we've got a few extra terrorists, that they don't seem to have this on their radar, the gravity of what it means to have story after story after story attacking propaganda against Iraq. Against Iran.
I was going to say, the movement of the Tea Party, what did that tell you about the mentality of USA, really? I mean, that's just a part like that.
I have absolutely no problem with the mentality of Americans whatsoever, but their politics is very, very controlled by money, even more so than here. I mean, you know, political parties have problems raising funds just to pay for a megaphone for one of the MPs to get elected or whatever in Britain, you know. But there's a mega bucks business in the States. It's massive, massively important in America. It's whoever's got the biggest checkbook gets the president. Whoever's got the biggest checkbook gets the Congress. You know, I'm afraid that's the way it works over there. And as I was saying earlier, with the voting system the way it is, with electronic voting, that can very easily be fixed. And, of course, it is being fixed. You know, we're talking about swings of something like 10 or 15% one way or the other can make all the difference in a state as to who gets elected. So, you know, we have a travesty of democracy. It's really, America is a plutocracy. It's ruled by the rich. And those rich people are getting quite dangerous because they can see their wealth flowing away as America's economy goes down the tubes, and they are getting dangerous. It's almost like a cornered lion or something like that.
One thing about the Tea Party is one of the people who stands for the Tea Party is Ron Paul's brother, Rand Paul. Ron Paul is a Republican candidate. However, he's always been a very good, outspoken person who's always been, you know, had a very positive and a very fair view of you know, world affairs and American policies. So, considering that Ron Paul and Rand Paul are brothers, why would Rand Paul be standing for the Tea Party?
Well, I mean, I don't agree with everything my brother says. I don't know about you guys. And I don't think you can necessarily say that. I mean, this is one of the things we've come to expect in politics nowadays, isn't it? That the Miliband brothers have very
well, yes, that's true, yes.
You know, or George Bush Jr. has a similar view to George Bush Sr. I'm really sick of these kind of dynastic politics. And, you know, isn't it Ed Balls? His wife is in the Labour shadow cabinet as well. You know, Yvette Cooper. I don't like this at all. This smacks to me of plutocracy, and it smacks of all sorts of corruption when you've got a husband and wife team both helping run the country. I'm sorry, what we want is the best people to run the country, and it's very, very rarely that you're going to find the best people in this, as a husband and wife. And we're starting to see this, you know, that's been a tradition in the States, because the US has been quite run by the plutocrats for, you know, for decades. But over here, it's become quite a new thing. You know, I'm quite concerned about that development, actually.
Indeed. Now, moving to another topic, I believe you want to discuss the ongoing 7/7 inquiry.
Yeah, well, we can mention that briefly, because I've started, I have a friend and colleague, Adrian Connock, who lives in Gloucestershire, in Dursley, at the moment, and he's a filmmaker. He made a film a long time ago, in fact, it was just 1 year after the 7/7 London bombings, called Mind the Gap. He made it with David Shaler before David took hallucinogenic drugs and decided he was the Jesus, basically. Well, first of all, he was the Archangel Megatron for a few weeks, and then he was Jesus. So this is before Dave's sort of late teenage drug experience, this ex-MI5 officer. And he made a film with him all about the London bombings. Now, what that did is it looked at a whole host of anomalies in the official story, and it suggested possibly one or two other explanations. And chatting off the record to Adrian, he's also been telling me that he believes that the signs are looking as if that the four alleged bombers and the London bombings were actually involved in drug dealing of some sort. Now, this is something which has popped up a few times during the various discussions about all the different possibilities of what was really behind the 7/7 London bombings. But one of the things which is absolutely clear is that these chaps were certainly not in any way practicing Muslims, because I've had a look through their telephone transcripts, which have come out in the inquest for the first time, for the day before the London bombings, and we see expressions like big knackers. We see all sorts of really, actually, what I can't repeat here, swearing, and this to me is not the sort of language you would expect from Muslims who are preparing in some solemn way to die for Allah. It looks to me, and it looks to Adrian, much more like some kind of little drug run that these guys were doing, maybe with, cocaine or something for some drug gang. And they may have been making quite a lot of money that day, or thinking they were about to make quite a lot of money that day, and then were entrapped into something else. One of the other things that the police has been shown again and again have been lying about this 7/7 London bombings. First of all, we were told that there were pictures of these three alleged underground train bombers getting onto the underground trains from the CCTV cameras. As you know, anyone who's ever been to London, there are CCTV cameras all over the place. There's about three different generations of cameras pointing in every direction imaginable. And we were told that eventually these would be released by the police, and we've still seen absolutely no pictures of any of these people actually on the platforms getting onto any of these trains, actually on the trains at all. So that was a lie, the police told. At least it seems that way. Otherwise, why have they not released these pictures as part of the inquest? The other thing we were told originally by the police back in 2005 was that they had a picture of the four guys at King's Cross Station as they just arrived from Luton, having a big kind of group hug before they went off to explode their bombs. This picture also has not been produced at the inquest, so that looks to be a lie too. So I want to know actually what evidence is there that actually puts these guys on those tube trains. Goodness knows, you know, what actually happened, but I feel the inquest has been concentrating on the minutiae of the emergency response and this kind of thing, and hasn't even bothered yet to look. It may be in the future it will do, but it still hasn't even bothered to look at some of the basic things like what explosives were used. Were they military explosives or were they homemade?
Indeed, yes.
So that's about it, really, for that one. I mean, I was amazed to see all the swearing, and it made me immediately think, well, this doesn't look like Muslims to me. We haven't seen many of the CCTV pictures that were supposed to exist have still not materialised 5-6 years after the attacks. And another thing which was quite interesting that came out last week in the inquest was that there was again mentioned by the London Underground controllers that the bombs may be underneath the trains. And that is something that we've seen again and again, is references to the floor being bent upwards rather than downwards, and things like the trains being lifted off the tracks, which suggests that possibly the bomb was underneath the train. Another thing is that many of the injuries of the people who were killed in the attack were of their legs and around their leg area, which again suggests possibly the bomb was underneath the trains and not a suicide bombing. I mean, you would expect if a suicide bomber was in the train when the bomb went off that it would be head injuries, neck injuries, and upper arm injuries, but that's not the case with most of the people that died. So there is actually quite a lot of evidence, I'm afraid, and I hate to say this, but I'm afraid pointing towards this being something very, very different to what we're being sold. The other thing fundamentally underlying all of this inquest business is that the inquest should not, it should not be an inquest, it should be a public inquiry, which is a much bigger affair, and for multiple deaths. Now, you would think 52 deaths would be enough to trigger a public inquiry, when public inquiries are usually, even if it's just two or three people. And the other thing is that this inquest is being held with no jury. Now, that to me, I'm afraid, is just totally ridiculous. There's no way that anybody should have allowed such an inquest to even been opened in the first place if there's no jury there, because that means that basically the coroner, the whole thing can be fixed by the coroner. I mean, if you look actually at another news story this week about votes for prisoners, you wonder who is actually running Britain. The votes for prisoners story is basically the European Union has decided that Britain is not allowed to stop prisoners voting. So we are being told we have to allow prisoners to vote. And I wonder what's going on with our legal system as well, when an inquest can be allowed to take place where it isn't actually an inquest, it should be a public inquiry, but they're trying to do it as one inquest, and we've got no jury either. So we'll have more next week, I imagine, on this, because Adrian's doing me some weekly reports on this for the show we do here in Bristol, and I'll keep you up to date with the, what I'm afraid I have to call a cynical sham of an inquest into these, and a travesty of justice in inquest into the London bombings. But it's been interesting what some of the stuff that's been coming out as evidence at last, and some of the things which we were told existed, which have simply not materialised as evidence.
It is indeed interesting. Seems to follow in a pattern of previous inquiries, such as the inquiry into the death of Princess Diana, and more recently, of course, the inquiry into the war in Iraq as well.
That's right, and I think it will be interesting to see how this all goes. But it seems that the whole process has been started with a particular conclusion in mind, and that's not the way to run an inquest. And of course, many of the survivors. I mean, it's not just me saying this. Many of the survivors of the attacks are also appalled by what they've seen and the way they've been treated. As you probably know, it was about a week before many of the relatives of those that died were actually, told finally that yes, your loved one was one of the victims. Now, why can't the police do their job more quickly? Why can't the authorities do that kind of thing quickly? People need to know immediately. If you've got a body of somebody, then you need to just tell people. You don't string it out for a week. What on earth did they think they were doing? But the biggest problem, I think, is that by many of the survivors who are very, very unhappy about the way this has all gone, and they've still not had a single opportunity to have their questions properly answered. They're asking all sorts of questions, some of the similar questions that I'm asking as well, but there isn't simply nobody in officialdom that seems to be prepared to answer the questions. So I think we have to have some very, very serious questions about 7/7 still. But for me, the way the whole inquest has been conducted is yet more evidence that this is a cover-up, and that ultimately this will come out. I mean, many people say, well, you'll never know what happened. I think there are people out there who do know what happened, and I think ultimately they will come forward, and they are coming forward. I mean, we're hearing all sorts of interesting bits and pieces, in a way, by showing some of this evidence. Some people are saying, well, look, you can clearly see that these guys were not devout Muslims, and they weren't about to strike a blow with the Quran in their hand if they were swearing on every single text, using more and more disgusting swear words. That doesn't sound like a devout Muslim to me.
No, indeed, it doesn't. And it's actually very interesting to hear even more evidence on top of the evidence that we've known for years. And I'm sure that more evidence is going to surface as time goes by, especially as this inquiry goes on. We are pretty much close to the end of time. I'd like to ask you, Tony, your show goes out every Friday on Bristol City FM, BCFM. It's the drive time show. And what's planned for this week's show?
We have a politician on. But I'm also taking a close look this week at home education. And I think there are a lot of people out there who feel that sometimes, I mean, particularly things like for particularly sensitive children, going to a massive comprehensive school, massive secondary school, they can actually get badly bullied, or they can find for all sorts of reasons that they don't believe that the education that the children are getting is the right education, you know, for whatever reason. What many people don't realise, many parents don't realise, is that they do have the right to educate their children at home. All you have to do is to get a form letter from an organisation called Education Otherwise, which is you can easily find on the internet, which has been going for years. They're basically a home education network throughout the country. And you send the letter in to the school explaining that you are educating your child otherwise, and from that moment onwards, then there's no need for them to go to school anymore. So it is quite legal, even though many people think it isn't, to educate your children at home. And of course, in many, many parts of the country, there are networks, in fact, almost all over the country, let's be frank. Here in Bristol is a very, very big network. There's loads of this going on, of course, in Birmingham too, in all the big cities, is that parents then collaborate. And, you know, you may be teaching your children at home 2 or 3 days a week, but then the other days of the week they go to a community centre to have a group lesson with other children, or to do sports or that kind of thing. So it's an interesting concept, I think, that many people haven't explored because of the fear that people have of actually taking their children out of school because of the scare stories about it being illegal.
Well, thank you very much, Tony, for joining us. We have reached the end of the show, and I look forward to hearing more from you next week, and I'll be listening this Friday. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me on again.
Thanks, Nat. That's it for this week. You're listening to Unity FM 93.5, Heart of the City. We'll be back next week, 8 till 10. Please do join us, and thank you for listening.